ourselves. We've got youth and governance people, young people here, and start, you can introduce yourselves to us, where you go to school. And,
I'm Madeline Arte. I'm going to be a senior at Social Central Elementary School, and this is my second term as youth governance.
I'm Eddie Carondo. I'm going to be a junior at Social Central High School, and this is my first term as youth governance.
I'm Mike Gable, County Board Supervisor, District 4.
What high school are you in?
It's been a while. In a couple.
I'm Greg Retzloff, County Supervisor 15. This is my first term.
And I'm Doug Noble, 17th District, and this is my, not sure how many terms, 24th year. And I represent Pleasant Prairie, most by the third Pleasant Prairie. And if the staff wants to introduce themselves, I mean, you've met most everybody before, so.
Yeah, we might as well, because we've got new faces.
All of us? Okay, sure. Amy Grio, I'm the Community Natural Resource and Economic Development Educator at the UW Extension Family Fellowship.
I'm Jeannie Malinsky Christensen, and I am the Consumer Horticulture Educator part-time.
I'm Lee Presley. I'm the Interim Agriculture Educator for Racine and Kenosha Counties.
I'm Terry Ward. I'm the Administrator for the Racine and Kenosha Nutrition Education Program.
I'm Alana Perez-Bellier. I'm a Nutrition Educator for the Kenosha Racine lesson tonight.
Oh, and this is, doesn't know how to tell time, Mike Solinsky.
I can tell time just fine, pal. This one's actually have to work for someone.
Yeah. And Mike, you want to introduce yourself?
Again? Really?
A couple new people here.
Oh, I didn't know. I know. Mike Solinsky. I'm the County Board Supervisor for District 19, which is half of Summers, all of Paris, and we get good chunk of Brighton and some of Bristol also. Welcome, people.
Okay, so our feature program tonight is a program from our Nutrition Education Office, and it is middle school food safety. You get to sit up front with me tonight, Carmel. It's cooler up here. They told me it was hot back there. So, oh no, it's warm up here. It's cold back there. We're gonna arrive. Okay.
It's good.
I just want to remind supervisors that when you first got the org chart that I shared when you first started on the committee, that our nutrition education program is a unit of our office, though they're not physically co-located with us. Because they serve both counties, they're actually in a building called Next Generation Now in the city of Racine. But they have office space here in our office, are here frequently. Alana said she's going to be here tomorrow, so she's doing a program. With our WIC office. So we have six nutrition educators. Terry is the administrator, and they have a clerical program assistant for their program. So with that, I'll turn it back to Terry and let her.
Okay, thank you, Teddy, and thanks for having me. This is a little bit of literature on our program. You're welcome. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the RECNEP program, we are a nutrition education program. We have two funding sources. They're both federal programs. One is called SNAP. It's a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And we reach out to groups of people that range in age from pre-K to seniors. The other program is the Expanded Food Nutrition Education Program. And that program is similar in that we reach out to low resource audiences to teach nutrition and how to stretch, you know, food share dollars or how to use limited resources wisely to get the most nutrition. It's different from SNAP in that it's more geared toward individuals and individual families. For example, we'll go and do home visits for the FNAP portion of our funding. So we also work with community partners to help low-income families, youth, and elderly learn about nutrition through research-based education programs. The specific outcomes that we're trying to facilitate with those learners are improved eating and physical activity, how to manage their food resources by using thrifty shopping practices and trying to target more nutritious foods, and then
also something that I know Alana's going to touch on tonight in her presentation is using safe food handling, preparation, and storage methods. So in the Kenosha County, we have our partners are several. The ones that I've had the opportunity to connect with personally in the last couple of months include Wilson Elementary, EBSOLA, the Outreach Center, Job Center, Sharing Center, Community Action Agency, and the Kenosha Achievement Center. So I have a few more partners to meet moving forward, but I'm working hard with all those partners to get our an agreement in place for how many times per year our educators come in and do programming with their audiences. So for the budgeting purposes that we're accountable to the federal government for, we have to have our budget all in place by October. So we've been very busy meeting with partners, signing agreements, and getting all of the details in place so that the educators can go do their magic, which is phenomenal. And I just have to add at this stage that being new, I'm 2 months into the position now, I am very fortunate to work with such a great team of educators. They're all seasoned, they all have very strong relationships with their community partners, and that makes my job a heck of a lot easier coming in, so kudos to them. Our goals for the next 90 days are to continue to meet with partners and find opportunities to provide our programs. In addition to analyzing the curricula that we provide within those programs. So, for example, if we are having a challenge getting parents to show up when we're trying to target parents, then what we would do is work with our partner, and oftentimes there's an incentive that can be offered that gets parents to come out. And that way we're getting the message out, not just to the children, but to the people that actually buy the groceries and are responsible, and reaching multiple stakeholders. So that's our goal. We're currently in a very strong partner is Kenosha Unified School District. We're in 30% of schools that are eligible to receive our programming. So what that means is in order to receive our program, a school has to have 50% or greater free or reduced lunches, and I would like to see that number go up to at least 50% in our next fiscal year. So that's our goal, in addition to increasing the quality of our programs with our partners. And that's RecNet in a nutshell. Does anybody have any questions?
When you had mentioned you'd like to see it go from 30 to 50, do you mean participation rate or?
That's a great question. So I wasn't very clear. So the number of schools that are eligible of all the schools that have a 50% or greater free or reduced lunches, of that whole group of schools, we're currently working with about 30% of those. And my goal is to increase that to at least 50% through meeting those principals and educators and building that partnership, introducing them to our programs, et cetera.
So. And if I'm not mistaken, I think SNAP drives that reduced lunch program to where you cut.
Yes.
So are you guys trying to expand that program? Are you trying to come in there and teach people about better nutrition?
Yes.
More along that lines as opposed to just trying to expand the free or reduced lunch program?
Yes, correct.
My perspective is I look at that, I'd rather have that than just trying to, because there's a sense, at least I get from myself, because I'm in the KUSD district, is that they're pushing more and more, and they'll sign people up, and then even if they don't need it, they're going to sign you up again. It's like just expanding federal programs. Whereas what you guys are doing is trying to educate people. The old adage is, you teach somebody to fish, or you can give them a fish, right?
Right, absolutely.
And teaching them is a lot more long-term sustainable and a lot less costly.
Absolutely.
To everyone. Yeah. So that's where you guys are kind of interfacing, right?
Absolutely, okay. That's correct, and I'm glad you differentiated that. That our philosophy is to give them the education and to show them how to even budget for groceries. We have a variety of curricula that shows, in our parent programming, for example, how to create a grocery list and how to make a plan and how old
over time that saves. So instead of thinking of, oh gosh, I'm really tired and I don't have a plan for dinner, let's all go grab some fast food, it's going to be much more nutritionally beneficial to them to, you know, have that plan in place and have prepared ahead of time. And we give people tools so that they can do that, definitely.
I'll just interject that it's actually the history of the program got started because the federal government was giving all these food stamps, recognizing that, gee, maybe we should teach them how to beneficially use these in a much more efficient and effective way for their families. So that's how the program started, was that we have to have an education component along with the resources that we're giving families. And we ended up in Extension being the purveyors of that information. So we've been really fortunate over now almost 75 years of delivering the program. So it's a real strong connection of making sure the families who get the resources do so in a way that they know how to benefit from them. So.
Sure. Can you tell me how many schools in Northway? You're doing all the entire county, not just.
Correct.
How many schools in Kenosha County are eligible under the 50% rule?
You know what? I'll have to get back with you, to you with that data. I don't have that specific number. I was just looking at the indexes this weekend to try and determine, you know, to answer that question specifically.
Give me a list of the schools too that are eligible.
Is any of this funding coming from the federal government?
For our program, it's completely funded by the federal government.
So do they put a lot of, a lot of correspondence with them? Is it people that are quite directive on how you have to go about your business or not?
Absolutely. We have so many very tight parameters on what we can teach. Everything has to be research or evidence-based. We have, you know, very tight guidelines on how we're meeting our audience. So we either have to have DPI index information with all of our agreements that we turn in, or we have to have a letter from a partner that says that their main audience is a low-resource audience.
I understand.
Does that fully answer your question?
It does. It does, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Kind of ironic, but I think just 2 days ago during the lunch hour, one of the more vocal employees was going off about somebody he was behind the line, and they used food stamps, or whatever you call it nowadays.
Sure.
And they bought 30 Lunchables. I didn't even know what a Lunchable was.
God, holy.
But that's what he was moaning about, the very thing that you're trying to teach me.
Yes, absolutely. And we even have some great programs where our educators have those packaged items that people go for convenience, and they show the deficit of nutrition. So they show the extremely high sodium and the high fats. And we teach alternatives to that, like tomatoes, for example.
Let's pass those tomatoes around.
Speaking of which, let's pass them.
And so we have a whole lesson for like parents based on learning how to read a label. And so they're looking at, this part, like for fats and salts, if it's 15% or more of their daily intake in that one food day, that's kind of like a red flag, like maybe we shouldn't eat this every day kind of a food. So that's one of the strategies we use when we're empowering that kind of information. So again, you know, we're empowering the consumer with the knowledge and showing them how they can use that. So when we're gone, they still have it with them.
And so, are these really quite spicy?
No one's tried them yet, Supervisor. You could be the first.
So they're not a full cayenne. It's cayenetta.
So it's a little
mild.
So is it as hot as a jalapeno? Not quite. I mean, they look like it. They're really quite.
I think it's probably close to there.
I might try that.
Just a little middle. Yeah.
And so, when are you going to give a little?
Lana's going to give you a demonstration of our program.
So, the lesson I have here is a mini lesson of a food safety lesson that I cover with middle school aged youth. Food safety is a huge aspect of nutrition. There's about 1 in 6 people every year get affected by foodborne illnesses. They get food poisoning. And that relates to about 48 million Americans every year. Of those, 128
1,000 hospitalizations result from that and about 3,000 deaths. This ends up costing taxpayers billions of dollars. So one thing that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has done is in the last 15 years, they've done research. They've chosen one foodborne pathogen that they can focus on and try and reduce this. So what they've done is they focused on E. coli and how they can reduce the infection of this. What they've done is they've put different systems in place, like the beef recalls that we sometimes see on the news. Food safety education is one of the things that I do. But through those studies, they found that they were able to reduce the amount of infection by 50% in the last 15 years. So this is huge. One of the biggest issues they're facing right now is with salmonella infection. And when I think of salmonella, I think of undercooked chicken or undercooked eggs. This right now is costing us about $365 million a year in direct medical costs. So getting that education out there is really important to me. I really think it's really important, especially when it comes to middle school aged youth. When they get to that point, a lot of youth are making their food choices. If they're going home to an empty house, they're making their own food. And if they have younger siblings, they're sometimes making the food for them. Sometimes they're making the meal for their whole family. So it's really important for them to learn what food safety means at that point, I think. And unfortunately, sometimes they are parents themselves at that age. That's something I deal with on a daily basis, too. So with that in mind, and I forgot to mention also, not only with the food safety, the food poisoning, there's also secondary long-term illnesses that can come from getting food poisoning. So it doesn't just happen that one instance. It could be a lifelong issue. So that's something to think about, too. So when I'm covering this topic with the youth, we go through a curriculum where we talk about where food safety mistakes can happen. And so it's usually in a home ec kind of setting, classroom. And so there's usually kitchens everywhere. And so one of the first responses I get is in school, and I look around and say, well, what about right here? And a lot of the kids talk about their experiences there when they're cooking in the home ec room. Or it can range from the grocery store, the farmers, at home, the restaurants, so that we really get a good discussion going. And I usually list all those different topics. Sometimes it can get as deep as people want to talk about GMOs and things like that. And I try and bring it back just to food safety, like what does it mean to us? And after we get a good discussion going about that, we talk about who's responsible for food safety. And then that brings in, we're responsible for food safety, moms and dads are. Anywhere from the grocery store where it's grown, the wholesale, the farms, everywhere you can think of. There's anywhere that food goes, you know, everyone has a hand to play in that. And then we start to talk about what bacteria is. Because some people think, they think of, you know, when we're washing our hands. Some people talk about that. I remind them that it's not something you can see. Can't smell it, you can't taste it, but it's there. We know it's there. We've learned this since we were very small about washing our hands. We can't see the germs, so we talk about that. And then we talk about the four main focuses about food safety. And I've got some little magnets here. This is a resource that's a free resource. I love free. It's always good. From the USDA. It's a magnet. If you'd like to take one home, please feel free. But it talks about those four main subjects. The first one is talking about clean. So what you want to start off with a clean surface. So then when we're talking about if we're cooking in the home ec room, we don't know who's there last. So we don't know if they really did a good job of cleaning. So we want to start off with a clean surface. We want to start off with clean hands ourselves. And then the second one is separate. Separate is keeping your meats and your poultry separate from your produce. So when thinking about salmonella, I oftentimes will bring up raw chicken. If you have two cutting boards, it's great to use one for the raw meats and one for the produce, but not everyone does. So if you have to use the same cutting board, I encourage them to cut the produce first and then wash the board with hot soapy water, or a quart water to 1 teaspoon of bleach solution will sanitize it also. So we talk a little bit about that. But then when I'm talking about chicken, I often bring in the experience I had growing up where my mom always washed the chicken before we cooked it. And when I asked in the classroom how many know they have that same scenario in their kitchen, at least a third, sometimes a half the hands go up. So then we talk about that. That is not what we recommend, because if that chicken has salmonella on it, you can imagine taking it to the sink and washing it off. Every splatter of water that now is everywhere is contaminated, that whole area. And then you're going to take it to the counter, to the stove, wherever that water drips, you've just contaminated the whole area. And what a lot of families would do is after they wash that off, then they go in and prepare their salad or their vegetable, and then so every piece of produce is now been contaminated with that salmonella. And so then I ask them, well, what do you think is going to happen after your family eats that meal? And you can guess what a lot of kids will come up with. Some things that will make me blush, but I'm like, oh, let's go back to our topic. So then we go into also the red square cook. This is one way we can make sure that our food is safe to eat. We talk about getting that food cooked to the right temperature. I have lots of handouts I give, but one of them, it shows the proper temperatures for poultries, for meats. And I bring in a meat thermometer and a refrigerator thermometer to show them what they look like, and how you can check if your food is properly cooked. Because then again, I go back to how I grew up, and when I would ask my mom, how do you know when the chicken's done? And she'd always say, well, you cut it, and if the juice runs clear, it's good. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's cooked to the right temperature. And I've also found that if I'm worried that I didn't cook it to the right temperature, I might overcook it, and then it's not as juicy. So then I remind them, you know, it's always good to err on that side of caution and just check with the thermometer. And then we go into the chill, the light blue square. And this, we talk about the danger zone. The danger zone is the temperature from 40 degrees to 140 degrees. In that temperature zone, that's a prime breeding ground for bacteria. And your food usually starts to get to that point within, after 2 hours of sitting out. So the golden rule is that you need to put your food away before 2 hours. Otherwise, it's not good to eat. Bacteria could be growing in it and it can make you sick. And then I ask, how many here have let the pizza sit out overnight? And a lot of times I get about a third. And then I'll get someone say, yeah, but I never got sick from it. And they say, well, you know, foodborne illnesses can happen as quick as 30 minutes, but it might not happen for 2 to 3 weeks. And I don't know about you, but I can't remember what I eat for breakfast half the time, much less 2 or 3 weeks ago. So you might have felt great the next day or the next couple of days, but maybe by Wednesday, you missed a day of school because you felt like you had the stomach flu. That could have been that pizza. So it gives them a lot of food for thought. And I noticed, like, in sixth grade, I have a lot of squirrely kids. Seventh grade, they're a little bit more mature, where they're really kind of taking it in. Eighth grade, they usually are pretty mellow, and I get a really good discussion from all of them when we're talking about this. But every grade is a little bit different. So those are some of the things we talk about. And then after we get through those four main topics, I have a food scenario where that we break up into groups, and that's something I'd like to do with you guys tonight, is just go through a couple of them, talk about the scenario, what happened, what went wrong, and what they should have done. So you can kind of get a feel of what we do to get the kids involved. So if you guys don't mind, I'd like for a board member to partner up with an extension colleague, and then we can just kind of look over what the scenario is, and we'll just kind of talk about it. Is that okay with everybody? Yeah. All right. Let's see. Give one card.
So, I think it is.
Supervisor Gable, and maybe make a team with split up our youth. We'll bring them into
Robert's dad asked him to
This is our starting.
What are we going to do?
don't make dinner Wednesday night. I have to run last.
I'll walk around like I usually do.
So.
The question would be, when we went to the grocery store, how long did it take to get from school to so what do you
know? We're staying in the union, we're sitting in the car.
Right.
So, noticed that the other day,
we should have put them away right away, but also we should have been in conscience of how far.
She should
be stopped at a friend's house.
And take her phone away. She found her for a week.
How long is it? It could have been out for a long time.
Yeah, she has home.
I mean, what?
This girl's in big trouble.
How about the one that had a hot day?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe go and do some other errands.
She's getting a C-plus.
You know, that's it. That's not a good thing.
Especially since the temperature is higher in a parking lot.
Right.
All right, friends, time to wrap it up. Has everyone had a chance to discuss what went wrong? Okay, and do we have any volunteers that'd like to share? Because everyone got a different card.
Because it was the same one you talked about.
Oh!
The one about the chicken and the vegetables.
Okay. So could you read the scenario for us?
Sure. It said, Jenny and Joe made dinner Wednesday night to help their mother, who worked late. They made baked chicken, potatoes, and salad for dinner. They cut the chicken on the cutting board and put it in the oven to bake. Then they used the same cutting board to chop the vegetables for the salad. Oops, what went wrong?
So everyone's going to be fighting for that bathroom tonight.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, I can see Red Sloth fighting for it.
All right. So what do you think they should have done differently?
They should have either used like two different cutting boards or washed the cutting board between the two.
Sounds good to me. All right. Who would like to go next? Or I can pick volunteers.
We do.
Okay.
Lee wants to
okay,
read
I'll
that.
Read
I really
gonna,
wanted
gonna
to,
our
but
grand
she took
answers.
It away from me.
I don't know. You're really enthused about it. Sarah's dad made this famous chili for dinner. Everyone enjoyed it, and there was enough chili left over for another meal. Sarah's job was to clean up the kitchen after dinner, but it was time for her favorite television show. She decided to leave everything on the table and clean up later. Sarah's friend called to talk about the television show, and Sarah forgot to clean up until 3 hours after dinner.
Oops. What went wrong?
Remember that whole comment about the bathroom, remember, it's chilly, so there's going to be a backlog there. But she should have had at least put in the refrigerator within the 2-hour window. So rather than running off to the television set, she should have made that her priority, cleaned it up, got it put away, and then could have done the dishes after she washed her program and apparently was talking with her girlfriend. I'm certain about homework.
Right.
Okay. Sure. And like we were talking about, she's only getting a C-plus in her class, so she's got to buckle down and start. And we're going to take her phone away, too.
All right. Sounds good.
You know, and when topics like that come up, I sometimes will bring in, you know, I'm a mom of a middle schooler too, and if that were me, I worked hard for that meal. He's gonna get an earful. So he won't forget next time. So, all right, who would like to go next?
Robert's dad asked him to stop at the grocery store on his way home from school and pick up eggs, milk, and bread. When Robert got home, he set the groceries on the kitchen counter, I sometimes do that, and play video games until everyone else got home. They discovered the groceries on the kitchen counter. They had been out about 3 hours. Oops, what went wrong? What should Robert have done differently?
Kind of the theme here is he should have obviously put them away as soon as he got home. Put the milk and the eggs in the refrigerator and the bread in an appropriate area, which is also kind of interesting. It depends upon how long it took him to get the groceries home. Yeah. Could have been the same difference, theoretically.
Right.
Which
yes.
I've often wondered is, say you go to a grocery store, buy groceries, maybe you got milk and stuff, you put in your trunk and you go do other errands. It's in there.
That's part of that two-hour window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so that's something you should think about when you're shopping, right?
For sure. And that's something we talk about. Yeah. You know, when you're grocery shopping, a good strategy is to get your dry foods first, then get your cold and frozen foods. That way it's in your basket for the least amount of time, and then go straight home and put those foods away. That way, because it's 2 hours total. So if you had a gallon of milk and it took you an hour to get home, and then the next day someone leaves it out on the counter for half an hour, it's only got 30 minutes left before it's no good anymore. So it's not 2 hours every time it's out. It's 2 hours total.
Kanisha decided to try a recipe she found in one of her teen magazines that called for marinating chunks of chicken in vinegar, soy sauce, and vegetable oil for several hours before cooking it. She cut up the chicken, placed it in the marinade, and sat it on the kitchen counter before she left for school. That way, the chicken would be ready to cook for dinner when she got home. Oops, what went wrong?
And by this time, everyone's, oops, what went wrong? It's like a game show.
Well, what went wrong was should have put it in the refrigerator while it was marinating.
Sure.
As opposed to leaving it out all day while she was at work.
I don't think everyone's going to love that recipe after tonight.
But even with the vinegar, does that not mean it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't cancel out what's going to happen to you.
It's a common myth that vinegar or citrus cooks something. It congeals the protein in a food, but it actually does not technically cook it. So any food more.
What does it do to the protein?
It congeals the protein, so it makes the protein tense up, so it often gives the appearance of being cooked. But it's not really temperature-wise safe. It doesn't kill the viruses or bacteria.
And I go rounds with my brother about that, because he'll cook stuff, marinate it, put it on the grill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, did you use the thermometer?
Yes.
No, it's good. And I cut it open. I'm like, I really don't think this is good. And it's all right. I'm like, you can eat it and tell me how you feel tomorrow. But
so on this one, could you have left the counter right? Of course, someone's home. Crazy, but then you're going to cook it, right? So would you be all right or not be all right? Because wouldn't that kill all the... I'm just asking. Not that I'm going to try it out, but I might.
Technically, the meat is spoiled by then because it's been out like 8 hours.
Huh.
So
especially
probably not
chicken, right? It's more dangerous than chicken then.
Yeah, there could be more than salmonella on there by then.
Right.
It could be several other bacteria. Bacteria double within minutes, so... If it's 8 hours, there's millions of bacteria on there by then. Maybe even trillions, but then, because they double so fast.
But if there weren't that time lapse, then I think what you're saying is correct. The temperature would, if you cooked it to a high enough temperature, that does kill the salmonella, so.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if it was in a safe 2 hour window.
Right.
What's the temperature to kill salmonella? I mean, chicken is like
165.
But some meats cook at 140.
That's, I think, pork.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it depends on the meat, too. Yeah. And things like eggs, if it's going to have salmonella, it happened in the chicken already. So the egg itself would already have it. So that's why the recommendation now is not to eat undercooked eggs. And part of that is because, you know, the chickens we have now are not the chickens our grandparents grew up with. The whole process is different now. So we just really have to be aware.
What's an undercooked egg?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head. I do have it over here. I can do it.
Is that over crazy or
Well, you know, like sunny side up, sometimes you want the yolk pretty much. You don't want it runny. And you want to make sure that the egg white is fully cooked.
So what about if you're cooking Benedict eggs?
Eggs Benedict? That's like poached, right?
Yeah.
So it's on the perfect. The yolk and the white are firm, they say. And then for egg dishes, so if you made like a quiche, 160 degrees. Or a frittata.
So if you'd like to take one of these, feel free. I can pass them around. It has the temperatures for the poultries and the proteins.
I got a turkey something.
Are we running out of time? Okay. Thank you all for helping and participating.
We'll just move on to the next item, and if that's okay, Chairman, and keep it going so we can get you all to your next part of the meeting.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Chairman.
I said, is it okay if we move on to the next agenda item, which is the educator program update? So,
A quick update on our babysitter's training. On July, our 4-H program assistant, Bethany Sorcy, facilitated the babysitter's training. A total of 30 youth participating in the training sessions. The babysitting training is available in Kenosha County through a collaboration between Kenosha County Double Extension and the American Red Cross. The training is open to school-age youth attending the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So it's very popular, and we do it every year. So, and this year was, you know, sold out. Also, this summer, we have ELCA summer camp. We are longtime partners with the ELCA Outreach Center. And this summer we provided some support with staffing. We managed to help them to get a couple of AmeriCorps volunteers. And this is an article in the Kenosha News about the camp. So if you are interested in more information, please, you know, you can have your own copy. And we're looking forward to continue this partnership every summer. This summer, we tripled the amount of participants in the camp, so it's really growing. It's becoming more vibrant every year. Also, during the summer, we've been continuing the Tech Wizards program. For a couple of weeks, our mentors met with our participants in the Outreach Center summer camp. Now, we're currently meeting in the Uptown Library branch, and we're meeting on Wednesday from 4:30 to 5:30. Kids are continuing their engagement with robotics and STEM, and I will be able to give you a little more information about the program next month, and this is going to be the future program, so stay tuned. We're going to do a very fun and exciting activity with robots.
Well, yeah, I'd be curious, when you go through these things with us, can you give us a little bit more demographics of who's participating, the kids? Ages, sex, race, all that. I think.
Perfect.
You know, if you wouldn't mind.
If
you don't think it's right, it's okay too, but I think it might help just to get an idea.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely very important.
I think the thing that we can, you know, one of the things I think about is the participation, you know, for the efforts and the things we do. And if you could, that would help just get a little bit better picture of.
I couldn't agree more. In the case of the
we'll do that next month, Carmelo, for your Tech Wizards program, because that's going to be his feature program next month for Tech Wizards.
Yeah, next month I'll come up with the statistics.
If it's too difficult, that's okay too. But
definitely. We're able to weave that in.
And one thing I should mention that, you know, part of my role is to try to engage, you know, a broader audience. So we are really trying to reach out and let people know that these programs are available, and it's an essential part of my job to. And let everyone know these programs are beneficial to your, you know, the youth. So so I'm working very hard to, you know, to make it accessible.
Okay.
I wanted to just share a little bit about an event coming up on Tuesday. You heard about my First Impressions program last month, and you should have all received an email with an invitation. I understand it's Tuesday night and you have your county board meeting. If you can pop over for just a bit, we start at 7, and it'll definitely be worth your time. I'm going to give you a little snapshot of some of the comments that they had. Joliet came here with 9 volunteers on July 17th to 18th, and we went down there with 12 on July 10th to 11th. And I'm just wrapping up the executive summary that I'm going to share on Tuesday. Some of the comments that I think were kind of enlightening, also related to what we did last month when you did the pre-visit sort of website search and see what you can learn about the community. We also engaged them afterwards and said, now what have you learned since your previous, you know, website and now the visit? And they said, we were surprised to find Kenosha as a large urban community, having thought that it was a farm town. One respondent reflected on the similarities between the two downtowns, Joliet and Kenosha, that had been hit by changes after a once bustling time. Another found himself reflecting on the condo development and wondered how that could be developed further. Its lack of affordability was a concern. So these are some of the things that Joliet had received over 2 days with us, and that's just a little snapshot of what's to come. So really enlightening things, and I think it'll be very valuable for the downtown Kenosha Inc. organization.
Now, and the one comment about affordability, I'm assuming that that respondent knew what the price ranges were, or inquired about them, or was that part of their packet of information?
Well, I didn't provide them. I didn't provide them with anything more than an average tourist would know coming in, so they were encouraged to speak to people and find out for sure. I know a couple of them talked to some riders on the trolley and found out that one had been renting a condo previously and knew how much she had paid monthly.
I'm actually surprised they found a couple of riders, but okay.
Right. So it was just based off their, time and effort to gather information from residents.
And I'm sorry, I didn't see the email, but where are you going to do your?
It's at CABA, downtown of the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. So it should be real close to where
that,
you're.
And it's just, we've got a, 7, pre-presentation website.
No, that's after.
Is it after or
before? No, it's after.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. Glad I don't see you there.
Were they aware, though, that watching you, that building that's been semi-finished for all these years is going to go to more or less a whole new people?
No. They never, that was not in this, in any of their responses. We talked a lot about housing and residential developments, but they did not come across that development. So they talked mostly about condos and the single family homes that are down.
I think you have to be low income to get it. I understand it's pretty extravagant apartments or condos. I don't
know. Right. It's
right. Big. So speaking right. to having some affordable housing units downtown that they're coming. Yeah, that's really funny.
Then as you started going through responses that you got the data and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel, and I don't want your whole presentation, but did you feel that it was accurate, or was it too narrowly focused? Did they get a broad spectrum of what they were looking at?
It's a good question because it's not a comprehensive view, it's not a comprehensive view of our city. It's just the downtown, which really can't be understood in isolation, but this is meant to be a first impression, and I think that they were spot on a lot of things. Although there is some contradictions. At one point they'll talk about, the great museum campus and the downtown parks that are kind of on the lakefront there. And then the next part they'll say, grade something in D for public open space. Yeah. So, the tool is not ideal, I guess, because you're not required to answer all the questions, and some people skip around, and next thing you only have 4 respondents, and maybe they all judged it low. I'm not sure.
But by and large, they concentrate in downtown, right?
They're limited to that.
Okay,
that
you kind
district.
Of give them up.
Yep, the map.
All right, so then that's
they
good.
They were encouraged to go outside of the district. Yeah.
Three things. The AES event, All American Selections event, was held August 4th in the garden, and it rained all 3 hours. Attendance was low, but, you can still go out there. And Lyndon Fenske, who works in our office every so often, helped me make up these flyers. So if you weren't there that night, they're still available, and you can check out things like the cayenne pepper. You have a little bit more about it in here, so if you really want to eat that. So overall, you know, greatest thing about the garden is we got it going. It looks great. We're getting a lot more people coming to that area of the Kenosha County Center and grounds. And our educators, our nutrition educators, are using the produce. So everything's working really well with that. If it's not Alana coming or Harry, we've got other ones that are coming to get the produce. So it's really working really well.
Good.
So they're using it with their programming and stuff.
That was Ruth Bowers,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they know how to use it properly. So. All right. We had Master Gardener training. It's going to be starting in September. But we had orientation last Tuesday night here in Kenosha and last night in Racine. I didn't hear the numbers for Racine last night, but we had 16 people go to orientation last Tuesday. So that's very promising. So that would start sometime in September. So we're looking forward to that. And last but not least, the county fair. We have a Master Gardener's booth there. And we were out there today, and we did very, very well talking to people about roses, because the theme is the Day of Swine and Roses. So you really need to go out and check out the booth, because we got some cake-related items. And then we also have things about roses. And we also have one of our master composters are there, and she is showing you how to compost. But you should be composting and not composting. So that's very interesting. And while we were there today, I was there with two of my master gardeners. We had one of the local radio stations come up and say, I want to interview somebody about the Master Gardener program, and both of them went to the back of the booth. So I made it on the radio today. It's very interesting how they do it now. All they do is they take a little smartphone and they put it right in your face, and it was fun. And you should go out and enjoy the fair, and we'll be there all through Sunday.
It's on right now.
Yes, yeah. Through Sunday.
What is it? What are all the? I know I saw you picking tomatoes yesterday, but what else do y'all have out there besides peppers and tomatoes?
We've got cucumbers.
Okay.
And we also have pumpkins and squash and melons.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you, the Minecrafts are not doing very well. Not sure why. The tomatoes are going gangbusters.
Yeah, they look like it.
Help yourself. There's more. Keep pass the bowl. Keep eating the tomatoes.
I mean, I know Doug thought he was going to eat them all.
Yeah, Doug said that.
That's what I'm thinking. You can just take them and enjoy them at the next meeting.
Okay. Well, since I started July 1st, I've been continuing to meet with project partners and agricultural stakeholders in the area, just kind of getting up to speed on projects that we're working on and new connections that could be made. I am transitioning into a coordinator role with the Farm Fresh Atlas of Southeastern Wisconsin. If you guys want one of these, you can grab one. Currently planning a big fundraiser dinner and silent auction to help us produce the Farm Fresh Atlas and support farmers and farmers markets in the area. So that's a big thing coming up on September 16th. If you want more information on that event, it's going to be held in Milwaukee at La Miranda, which is a really awesome restaurant. We're going to have some really great chefs and also local produce being featured there. So, we're also preparing to release applications for listings in the Atlas to markets and farmers, so kicking that off and then hopefully getting all of that wrapped up by 2015 to produce a new Atlas and get that out to users. So that's going well. I'm also collaborating with Amy Grile and the Walworth County agriculture educator on developing farm transition and succession planning programs. It's kind of a continuation of work that's been done in the past on a survey that has gone out and is out right now to farmers throughout the state, just assessing their issues and needs in terms of transitioning on to the next generation. So we're trying to get a workshop set up for local farmers sometime in September, just to help them kind of plan and work on that process. And then lastly, just preparing for there's a rural landowner conference coming up in November. So that'll be between Racine, Walworth, and Kenosha counties, and we're trying to line up speakers for that event and also do promotions. So those are my big three.
How many farm roughly is Kenosha County have?
63. 63 farms.
No. I just saw the ag statistics yesterday. It's over 200. There's about 60. It's
63 sound low.
Yeah.
Well, what's defined as a farm? Is there a definition for it?
There is, and that I wouldn't be able to give the specifics.
I think the definition is pretty broad. It's you have to only have over like $1,000 in income that's supplied by your operation. So
okay. It's not acreage or anything like that.
Acreage is really not.
I should know that because we just yesterday did the ag visioning session for the agricultural educator position.
Of those, either 63 or 100, whichever the number is, are they all aware of you? Do you think?
We'd sure like to think so, but I can't be that bold to say that. A majority of them would in a variety of settings, okay. Sure. Whether their children are involved in 4-H, which is right. A typical touch point,
sure.
It perhaps could also be many of the educational programs that are offered.
I think one of the things since I've been on the county board that I've noticed, especially on the human services side, that's another committee of mine, how many people know of these great services that the county provides? That was always been the question. We're all sitting through these things, we're going, how do we know you? This sounds great. Do people know you do this? You know, that type of thing. And I know it's a big question, but it seems like I'm just curious of how many people really are aware of it. And I know we can tell our constituents about it. We should. I mean, that's
we hope you will.
Well, it depends on how well we do our job, I guess. But some guys don't even look at their emails, but we won't say who that is.
We could probably have one meeting that does nothing but talk about how do we increase our visibility and participation in our programs? Because trust me, as educators, we talk about it all the time.
We feel
like we're doing everything we can, but obviously we're not, because there are many people who don't always know about it. So,
every committee I sit on has the same problem. I've always said human services is the best kept secret in Kenosha County.
It probably is.
And you always, you go to mental health and IOTA, how do you get these word on the next day you read somebody dies of a drug overdose? Well, that's what that committee, how do you get the word out?
It's a challenge, isn't it? It's a real challenge.
Well, it gets into some bigger things. It's like, it also helps me look at their tax bill. What am I getting for this huge number? Well, here's one, that type of thing.
That's a really good point, because unlike many programs or services in the county, ours is open to almost anyone and everyone. In other words, you don't have to be in the court system to have access or have been ill in the health situation. Ours is that big, broad community-based education, so we like to say that. We are one of the county's best benefits in terms of what they have available. So let me back up and just say again, with the ag visioning session that we did yesterday, great participation among the two counties. This now will give us the information we need to help focus the program priorities for the position description. Hope to do that by the end of the month. The position is posted, and it has to be out there available for people to apply for 4.5 weeks. We then do a preliminary interview, and we schedule final interviews after that. I've just confirmed that Chairman Noble is going to be on the final interview committee representing you as the Kenosha County Extension component, and then there'll be a like component from Racine County. And then our additional member on the committee representing Kenosha will be Jenny Tunkies, Chief of Staff. So that'll be the makeup of our committee. So we'll see where that process goes. My last element for myself is that as faculty members in UW Extension, we are expected to, once we've received tenure, is to have a tenured faculty review every 5 years. In essence, it means we compile a lot of documentation over what we've done over the last 5 years, and we justify that we're still worthy of continuing on as a faculty member in the UW system. I completed that process this last month. One more five-year process done. So I'm in my Department of Family Development, so I've completed that piece. Yes, it's a big deal to put all that together. And what it actually does is make you step back and look at what you did the last 5 years, and pretty soon you go, "Oh, my luck, that's pretty good. I didn't know that. Wow, kind of amazing. Kind of surprise yourself when you have to go back and look at what you did over 5 years. So that's it.
Thanks. Sounds good.
Should we have clapped?
Oh, no. Listen. My husband would say that because he got tired of listening to me complain in the process that I went through, so we got through it. So good. We're done.
That's it.
Then
I
recess
and reconvene in the. Thank you.
Thank you.